Hi, everybody. So I'm here today with Alan Clark, who I have known for 2 years now, I guess, isn't it, Alan?
Very much.
Yeah. So Alan and I have decided that what we want to do is come together and talk about various different topics that we both find of interest. And we're going to do a series of web podcasts, I guess is what they're like, web discussions on various topics, maybe like Alan and Byro's Fireside Chat. And this one that I want to kick off with is a topic that I've, you know, it's been burning inside me for quite a while, since I've come back to the UK, since I came back in 2018, and that is business consulting. And in my opinion, business consulting is broken. And so what we're going to do today is discuss why I think that is. Alan doesn't think so. And we'll have a little bit of a discussion around that. So grab your tea, your sandwich or whatever, and sit back and relax and listen to what we have to say. So Alan, the reason I believe business consulting is broken is that, you know, I started off in business consulting, right? I started off at PwC, then PwC got bought by IBM, et cetera. And I worked as a consultant for a number of years. And one of the reasons I ended up moving from consulting into being like the CTO or IT director for a business was that I was tired of actually people not listening to what I had to say. I realized that as a consultant, after a while, people just get numb to what you're saying and then just paying you and not doing it. And you could see the fact that they weren't actually taking action on some of the things I was saying was causing issues within the business. And then I thought, well, hang on, is my advice rubbish, or am I just giving advice that people aren't listening to? So then, you know, back in 2007, 2008, 2009 or whatever it was, I can't remember now, I took a position as a CTO for a large e-commerce business in Norway, and pretty much took my own advice. And as that, you know, the company did well, it's not about me promoting myself, but the company did do very well and it's still doing very well, and a great succession plan in there. And I saw that as I was sitting on the other side of the table talking to consultants coming to me to offer me advice, I was looking at them thinking, well, I've been in your shoes. I know you have no clue what you're talking about. And people are trying to advise me not having been on the other side of the table. So my issue at that level, when we're running larger businesses, was that, you know, I'm talking to a consultant who's never had to own a balance sheet. They've never had to run a department. They've never had to go through the things that I'm going through. So they're picking out small things and assuming that's my biggest problem. But actually, you know, I'm running a big department here. That's not my main problem. And then when we take that and scale it down to the smaller world of entrepreneurship and startups, one of the biggest things I saw was that, you know, advisors, business advisors that would help small businesses had done nothing. They had no experience in their careers. And, you know, we met through Scotland and Scottish Enterprise, and obviously you have changed my mind of small business advisors, you know, the star show out of all of them. But a lot of the people I met who were giving advice really hadn't done it. Well, they'd done one thing successfully once, but that hadn't been repeated, hadn't done it across industry.
Is that their fault, or is that your fault for bringing in the wrong advisors to give you the wrong advice? Been a little bit about my background. I didn't do the formal business consultancy role that you did, but I spent 20 odd years working in marketing services. Over that time, I probably worked closely with 75 companies who I was working on a one-to-one relationship with, directly involved in their business. And where I got to was that most of them got the advice they deserved, the advice that was due to them. The best of them did a really great job at finding the right fit with the right skills for the issue they had, and then worked really well constructively with their advisors, like me in my particular area. And the worst of them either abdicated all responsibility to all the problems to us and said, fix our business, but you've only got that much involvement, or they really just wanted to have somebody to blame for not taking our advice, but saying to their boss, well, it was all your fault, not mine. So I think there's an element here that actually, as much of the responsibility for advisory being broken sits with the businesses and not the advisor.
Sure. So I think there's a couple of things, right? So there's the adage about IBM, right? That no one ever got fired by hiring IBM.
Absolutely.
Which probably a few people should have done given my experience, but that's a different thing. So that is one aspect of it all, where people are hiring in consultants in a way to cover their own backsides. I guess where I'm coming from is not necessarily the advisors that you go out and seek, but it's the advisors that are thrust upon you.
Right.
In your, like, obviously we met through Scottish Enterprise, and so, you know, we were matched up via those guys, and it was fantastic, and it's obviously worked very well, and Scottish Enterprise is a great organization. But there are other accelerators and incubators that we've been part of, and even just networking locally and in the area that I am, in Croydon and Kingston and Wimbledon and Richmond, you know, there are some people who are fantastic because, you know, they've done it, they've been there, done it. But then there's a huge, they seem to me to be in the minority. There's a huge number of people that you get as part of an accelerator, an incubator, or someone is an additional advisory service that really aren't fit for purpose. They've done one thing maybe, and that's it.
How much due diligence have those incubators and accelerators done on the people that they are putting in to give them advice? So you mentioned Scottish Enterprise there. I am in their panel for High Growth Ventures Programme. To make that panel, we had to go through an extensive due diligence process to prove our credentials and credibility and capabilities to actually be able to offer that advice. So there was a very significant level of filtering before you were going to meet anybody. And I'm one of 10 people on that roster. And even within that, the team in Scottish Enterprise match up of their 10 people on the roster, who is the best fit for the particular requirements of this particular business. And one of the reasons I was matched up with you was because part of your challenge was customer engagement, marketing. There are others in there who are much, much more aligned with, it's all there, we just need advisory on fundraising, on investment, and these guys are effectively experienced investors that know that world inside out. So that is about making sure the right client gets the right advisor. And when you move out to some other areas, maybe I'm being generous to say it, there's a lot of enthusiastic and well-intended amateurs, but equally there's a lot of enthusiastic and well-intended experts or professionals. And really, it's incumbent on the client, the company receiving the advice, to be confident that they believe that whoever they are choosing to take advice from is actually going to give them good quality advice. So is it that advisory is broken, or is it that there's a lot of clients out there that aren't doing their job and making sure they take advice from the right people?
So I think this is where this is an interesting gap, right? Because I think what you have and what I've seen in the various accelerators and incubators, whatever, that I've seen through the eyes of our clients at Atom, is that, or even ourselves when we were promoting Avrium, is that you can't choose, right? It's that these people are thrust upon you, or
you listen to.
Well, yeah, you could definitely.
I've sat in many a room and people have talked at me and been in one ear and spit out the other because I wasn't willing to hold it in the middle.
100%. But the thing is, how do you know who to listen to when you're a young company that's starting up and never done this before, right? Now, it's easy for me because I've been in business for 20 years and starting a new business. I mean, for me, I was sitting across the table for someone who's done one thing once, and I've done the many different things many different times, right? And
so, well, I remember many different telling countries. Me I've been forced to go to a session on how to hire your first employee.
Oh, yeah. And the wonderful ones on mindset and all that kind of stuff, which is great, I think. But it needs, I mean, I'll give you a great example. I was on an accelerator program in London, and they were talking about a guy raised his hand and asked about, you know, I want to hire an intern, but I'm not sure. I've never managed any people before. How do I delegate, do all this kind of stuff, right? And the people who were advising were about 24, 25 years old. They were pretty much intern material themselves, right? And they were giving some of the worst advice I've ever heard, right? And I can't remember exactly what it was, but I gave the feeling. And at the end of the day, you know, I just ended up tapping him on the shoulder and said to him, look, don't listen to anything that they've said. These are the things that you want to say, because he had a notion in his head of what he wanted to do. And actually what he wanted to do was the right way. He needed a couple of tweaks, but he was on the right way of doing it. And what they said was completely opposite. And he was sitting there confused, and he didn't know what to do, because he felt he should be doing one thing. They're telling him something different. And I just tapped him on the shoulder and said, look, you're pretty much there with what you need to do. If you need any advice, here's some information. You know, yeah. This is what I can give you. Now, the problem you've got is that a lot of these guys, you know, this is the first time that they're running a business, starting anything new. And so they don't know what good advice and bad advice looks like, because they've never really had advice before, right? And so obviously I can see where people are giving something a little bit that may not help them going in the future. There was another great example of a tech. I went to an event which was run by the company. They invited me in, and I just sat there listening to this guy give tech advice, and it was horrendously wrong. I mean, it was just so wrong. It was unbelievable. But I didn't feel I could say anything, because I knew the guys organizing it, and I did just want to say to him, mate, you don't know what you're talking about. And the people listening were eating it up. And I just thought, oh my God, like, how, you know, there's a room of 50 people here all believing what he's saying. Now, I can't just stand up here and say, no, guys, this is fundamentally wrong. You need to start thinking about other things, because there's going to be rooms like this all over the country.
So hold on. Who invited that person into that room to talk to those people?
Oh, the organizer. I mean, they were the ones organizing it. It was their
thing. They are the ones that are at fault in this.
But they don't know they're giving bad advice, right? But this is the thing. They don't know that it's the wrong advice, because they've not done things before that would allow them to understand that the advice didn't.
So if you were the company on that program, why would you want to join the program if the people running it have got no real knowledge base or experience base to base this on? Is that not complicit on them for not having done their due diligence and just jumped into the first thing that came along, which by default probably means they're likely to be the people that don't succeed because they're not doing their job properly?
Well, now, okay, so I think this is where it gets interesting, because there's two factors that I think at play here. One, it's availability of advice, right? And in certain areas...
You can shoot a sticker.
It's true.
You're down the pub on Friday night and say, anybody any advice for me?
But that is true. But when you look at... When I was going to the various different organizations here, when I came back to the UK and just trying to embed myself in different places just to understand what was going on, you could see that really there are certain communities that are just gravitating towards these people because they see them as a peer group, right? They think anyone else is going to be expensive, or it's just higher level advice and it's not going to be something for them, or it doesn't. So if you're starting a barbershop, or you're starting, you know, a nail salon or whatever it is, you can go to these people that may be running IT for them, and they'll give you advice, but they'll have only been doing infrastructure work, for example, in the IT, but they can't give you broader advice, right? And I think this is the thing where people are just going to go to the network, and they know someone who knows someone, so that's the person that they go to, right? And I agree, maybe they should do their due diligence, but for them, I guess they can't see the not necessarily the value of the advice, but the quality of the advice, right? Because they've seen that this guy's advised three of their mates, and their mates are kind of happy with it, you know. And it's like,
so
anything.
Are you suggesting there should be regulation or qualification around who is allowed to give advice?
No, because then everything you get is going to be the same advice, right?
No, ultimately, not necessarily. There's a report I saw in the FT come back just a couple of years ago, and it was exactly about this. It was a report on areas where companies felt the advice they had received had been good or hadn't been good. And at the bottom of the pile, where 1 in 25% of companies felt that they had received poor advice, were accountants and lawyers. Yeah?
It tells you a lot, really.
Hold on. 95% of people felt that they had received good advice from their accountant and lawyer. The biggest area of bad advice was 50% of companies felt advice that they'd received on IT and technology had been poor. A third for management and marketing, and a quarter on property. Is there a correlation between the fact that the Institute of accountancy, the Law Society regulate lawyers and accountants, and you have to have professional level qualifications to practice. Doesn't mean they're all perfect. Plainly, at least 5% get it wrong. But you don't have to have any kind of qualification to practice in IT or technology.
See, okay, we leave that bit to one side. I'll get to that in a second. But let's start off with the lawyers and accountants, right? So you and I have dealt with accountants and lawyers all over the place.
Yep.
And we came together because of Avrium. Now, 50,000 businesses a year fail, right? Because of cash flow. So if they're getting great accounting advice, then why on earth are the 50,000?
Well, aren't they? Are they just not getting any advice at all and they're doing it themselves and they fail? Because the ones that do get good advice actually are the ones that succeed because they are getting good advice from people that actually know what they're talking about. And most important of all, are able to give the right kind of advice to the right kind of company. We've all been through this where we've seen organizations that will build an incredibly complex model of every possible factor to allow them to budget and forecast, and then try and apply that into micro business and say, I'll spend my entire life putting zeros into this because it's utterly irrelevant for my business.
True. But okay, so I think that if I go back to the accountants, lawyers versus IT, I think the one thing that you get with accountants, lawyers is that a lot of the advice that you get from them, you may think is good at the moment in time because you get a tax credit or you get something, you know, you save a little bit on your tax. But actually, you don't know that advice is baked into your company, right? So it's only at the edges. So when it does come to, you know, understanding your liabilities and what tax is going on there, what is happening if you have a legal dispute and whether you're set up correctly. When it's only when things go horribly wrong do you really know whether the advice that you've got is actually any good. Whereas if you're looking at marketing, IT, those other pieces, they're very immediate feedback. It's almost instant feedback that you're going to get, right? You know whether your website's working or not, it's costing you huge amounts more money. And I think actually lawyers and accountants, if you're looking at ways to break a business, is by purely bad accounting and purely bad legal, right? IT will break a business to some extent, but actually something that's fundamental core, it's because it's a belief that I've got the right legals in place, or it's a belief that I've got the right accounting in place, that you go off
and make lots of decisions. Is that because the regulations around the legal and accounting are so much clearer? They're all in accounting practice statements about how you will deal with things. And if you are a competent accountant, you know how to do that. And around tax, you know, a lot of businesses go bust because there's tax rules in place and they try and find a way around them.
Sure.
So that's their own fault, in my view. You know what? If you played straight down the middle of the fairway, you would never get in the rough to begin with. But if you want to play in the edges, you made that decision. You chose that advisor, you chose to take their advice. I'm sure there will be the outliers who said, I had no idea I was getting bad advice. But in the world of IT and technology, those parameters are nowhere near as clear, if even they exist at all. So often what we end up doing is, I am the blind who is a one-eyed man.
Okay, so I think in the world of IT and marketing as opposed to accounting and lawyers is that, not only is it immediate, but you can see people's track records. They exist, right? And it's all plain to see out there. You can actually go and say, okay, what have you done? How have you helped? And you can go and get that. With accounting and lawyers, you don't necessarily have that. And I think one of my other issues around regulation is that whenever you have, you get got straight advice from a lawyer and accountant, right? Whenever have they actually sat there and said to you, well, actually, I firmly believe this and that without 1,000 caveats, right? I mean, so regulation ain't going
to
help.
Well, that's because they're regulated and they have to cover their backside should there be a problem.
And so that's why regulation doesn't really necessarily help from a business perspective, right? In that sense, if you want truly someone who's going to give you that advice that may be a little bit out of the box, you ain't going to get that from a lawyer, right? Unless you actually, from the US lawyers, you do. So when I'm working with the US lawyers, way more interesting, much more commercial minded than I found the UK lawyers to be, right?
Well, what I would say in my experience was, if I asked for advice, they would caveat it But they would give me advice. They would say, here are the parameters. If I was you, this is what I would do. And almost without exception, I said, well, that's what I'm going to do. Because the reason you're there is because I chose you very carefully. And if I'm not going to take your advice, why am I paying you to sit opposite me?
So then that's another point actually there, payment, right? So yeah, when did you ever find a cheap lawyer, right? When did you ever, and even with your accountant as well. I mean, okay, people do try to do.
Part of what I'm paying for there is their professional indemnity insurance and them knowing that if they give me bad advice, I can pursue them and get compensation. We know that doesn't happen in the world of IT or marketing or a management consultancy, very seldom, certainly not in the small end.
So I think, again, so we're kind of moving on, or maybe I'm agreeing with you in some way, but I think we're moving to the point where if we're looking at IT and marketing, actually what I find is that people want to spend the lowest amount possible, right? Because
bad clients get the consultancy they deserve. Give me a cheap answer, not a good answer.
Yeah, and but that I'm not entirely sure why they want to spend less. I mean, marketing marketing, I know IT. I think I would always say that with IT, you've got to spend some money up front understanding anything. It's like building a house. I think I gave this analogy to the other day to someone else and saying that, you know, you don't, when you build a house, you need a good architect, right? He understands what you're trying, the vision that you're trying to create and build the foundations there, because you get a shoddy architect who uses shoddy materials, the thing will collapse after X number of years, right?
Well, you also need to have somebody that understands the vision. And the way we, and this explains us when in the last business I was heavily involved in the operational side of, was you want to, your plan is to end up with a mansion. To begin with, you can only afford a bungalow. But we can build that bungalow ready to build a mansion around it. Too many people jump in and say, this is what I need. Well, I gave you what you asked for, entirely unsuited for where you need to take this.
So what I'm hearing from you is that, okay, there's a lot of good advisory out there, but A, people aren't really finding it, or people don't know, aren't ready. Let's put it this way. They aren't prepared for going out there and getting good advice. Is that kind of the gist?
Yeah. Yes, that's a large part of it, but also they don't do the necessary legwork to make sure that, one, they know what advice they need. And by that, I don't mean they know the answers, but I mean, do I need a top-level law firm to come in and draw a shareholders agreement for my hugely complex business, or can I just go and take the off-the-shelf shareholders agreement? Because quite frankly, right now, that's all we need.
So, okay, so here's a question, just to interrupt you there. So, obviously, with Scottish Enterprise, the person that did that piece of work was Scottish Enterprise, right? So mm-hmm. they did that and then go and figure out, okay, we actually think you need X, Y, and Z things. So here's a person who can help you do X, Y, and Z things. Whereas most people who come into, who use business advisory aren't really actually sure. They're starting from, and I'm talking for people who are starting from way, way down. And I sit in a co-working space and I sometimes I'm sitting there and I'm listening to some of the business advisors. And these are people who are trying to make life decisions, right? They're saying, I've got a job. Should I make a change to move into a new business? I want to start this business. How do I go about it? What do I do? And that's a huge difference, right?
Okay, and that then leads on to a whole other subject matter. Why is it that most successful entrepreneurs are on their second or third business?
Well, then it's, yeah, so this is my piece of experience.
They've learned mistakes.
Yeah.
So again, but know what they're looking for.
Well, this again goes back to my original point, was that a lot of the people I see out there giving advice haven't done the things that they're advising on. So you're a spectacular difference in that, you know, you've been top of marketing, you've raised lots of money, started a radio station, you've done all these things and over the years. And so actually you can see the journeys that we're on and other companies you advise on, and you can say, well, actually, yeah, when I did this, I had these kinds of issues, right? Or I can foresee in the 6 months time where your problems might lie. A lot of these guys don't, right? A lot of them don't. And I think that's, for me, is a key problem I have.
And they'll reflect back into the issue of, do I need to have everything I need before I start, or can I start this journey and learn and develop as I go? And they really, you know, it's not a given that because you start a business you will succeed. And it is absolutely not a given that everybody can successfully start and grow a business. In fact, it's a tiny minority that are capable of doing that. So maybe some of these poor advisors and poor businesses are just collateral damage on the journey.
Could be, but I mean, I think it's a shame to waste that kind of talent, right? And talent and resources, which are being...
Maybe it's just never destined to do it.
Well,
you know, some of the people that I work with have really early on recognized their limitations and sought out really smart people either to formally help them or informally help them. And why did they ever get that engagement? Because they were smart, had a clear idea of what they were doing. Two things, they knew what they knew and they knew what they didn't know. And smart people were willing to help them. I've also met a whole host of people along the way who frankly thought they knew it all, and there were massive gaps, and a whole lot more of the former succeed than the latter. And maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe it's not the advisors, maybe it's the clients that are broken.
And I would, I definitely agree with that. There are definitely people that we've worked with over the years that have a false sense of their own greatness, right? Because they've maybe, again, but it's one of those things where a lot of people don't understand that you may have been very successful at a company like Google, you know, being a great VP, but running your own business is nothing like that. And that, there's an interesting story there with some great guys that I work with and now and used to be my next door neighbors in Dublin. You know, they started a marketing agency that is doing fantastically, New Digital. I can name them. They're great. They're absolutely fantastic. And one of the things, you know, that they found was that...
Name them, because, you know, this is important, this environment, that people are doing well, people get to know about them.
Yeah. And then, like, so Nuke Digital, based up in Manchester, Lena and Luca, they're great. And they're winning awards left, right, and center in marketing. They're doing a whole bunch of crowdfunding. And I remember when I was... They were starting at Google back in the day in Dublin. I remember talking to them saying, you're part of a cult. It's, you know, the way that you're going to work at 8 a.m., not coming back at like till 9 p.m. You're living, you're talking a different language. It's cultish. And so, you know, one of the things that, you know, we talked to them about is that when you leave, it's going to be very different because you don't have the support network. You know, and they found out, but they've thrived massively. And I think, you know, there are other people that I saw at a similar stage, again, who came out of Google from Dublin, who basically said, wow, this is hard. Right. When I pick up the phone and people don't talk to me, but, you know, when I was working at Google, people did pick up the phone. And I said, well, the big difference is you're calling from Google. You're not calling from, you know, A&M Smith's and Co's company. Right. So, but this is the thing that people get that full sense of.
That reminds me of a little story I heard the other day of a chap who worked for a big company who happened to have the same name as the company. And everybody presumed when he phoned, he was one of the owners because his name was the same as the company. Said, Alan, this is the best bit of career advice ever. Work for a company that has your name, even if you're at the bottom of the pile, because every door opens.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. But one final thing
before we finish up, I want to ask you about that. You mentioned that, you know, there's a lot of people out there who have never done it, who are giving advice, and the implication I took from that was that means they are not competent to hand out advice because they've never done it.
Well, there you go. That's an interesting. So I don't, in many ways, I do believe that, right? Because I think... I do that because I think in certain circumstances, especially certain niche things, right? So for example, when you're growing a business from, let's say, the first 30 people to the next 60 people, right? Or the first 10, 30 to 60. That is a really interesting journey if you're a startup at any point in time. There's so many different things going on there, and there's so much of those years. And unless you've been there, done that, right, you don't understand all the different pressures that are coming through from a fight, like from a revenue perspective, finance perspective, HR perspective, you know, even just things like, oh my God, office space. I mean, I remember when we switched offices, and, you know, that takes a huge amount of your time trying to figure out that kind of stuff. And then you get into leases and you get in all of these things you need to do as a business founder. And you know, they're things that you need to think about. And I think in certain circumstances, you kind of need someone who's been through that. Now, well, I think
I get that, because I love my analogies. The analogy I'm thinking of here now is look over in Spain, and the top of the Spanish league, Real Madrid have just won the league with Zinedine Zidane as a coach, who, from what I understand, doesn't really do much coaching. But what he has is, when he sits in a dressing room with mega stars, he says, I know exactly what it's like to be you, because I was you. In fact, I was better than any of you. I'm more successful on that pitch than any of you. So I understand, and I have your immediate respect, and you'll listen to what I do. So I get that. I've done it. That puts me in a position to lead and advise this group on how to deal with it, because I have walked those miles. On the other hand, using the football analogy, you've got Jose Mourinho, who made about third division in Portugal, and that was it. Had absolutely no experience at the highest level, but became, for a decade, the most successful coach, advisor, in the world of football. And never done it. He went and learned how to do that.
So, and Bobby Robson as well.
But exactly. There's loads of them. I only use those two because I kind of, and there's many a top level player who was hopeless as a coach. So I think I'm really throwing the point in there that you got yourself to get out of jail card on, which is you don't have to have done it to be a good coach or advisor. But I totally get that if you've done it, you have an insight and an understanding that you cannot have if you haven't been in that environment. And that is one of the things why I enjoy what I do now. You know, I remember when I first started out working, one of my bosses said, Alan, your biggest problem you have right now is you look 23 years old. It's completely obvious you've not done it. The great news now is every one of these grey ones is a bitter experience, and people actually listen, because I can say I've walked that path. I know what it feels like to be waiting to go into the meeting to find out, is the deal on or off?
I think that's you just raised an interesting point there, because I remember when I first came back, someone talked to me, they said to me, I'll never forget it, because it was a very strange comment. She basically said to me, I said, oh, we're starting this business, we're doing X, Y, and Z things. And she goes to me, oh, so have you got family and kids? I said, no, I'm single, not married. And she goes, oh, well, then obviously you're younger than me. And I know for a fact I was at least 10 years older than her, right? But not only I age gracefully, obviously, that's one bad at all. But you could see that in her head, well, I'm not that relevant then, because obviously I'm younger than her, and so therefore my advice isn't there. Well, I see what your point is, and I think with the knowledge and experience, it's one thing. I think one of the best pieces of consulting I ever got was from Forrester way back in the day, and paid a lot of money for it. But it was a guy who was very knowledgeable about a very wide area of different things, and we went there. We paid a lot of money simply because we were going to move into a new market, and we decided before we do this, we've got to do the research. Talk to this guy. And, you know, spending the money with him saved us a lot of money, because we decided that we weren't going to do it because we weren't ready for it. And in that case, he hadn't had the experience of going into those markets, but he had an understanding of the markets, right? And his advice was, if I was in your shoes, a bit like a lawyer's, right? And that's, I agree, you know, a lot of lawyers won't have had experience in doing X, Y, and Z things, but they can at least have seen scenarios through their experience, which will reflect or mirror what you're trying to do. And I think that is also, but then again, that comes back to experience, right? And that's a different type of experience.
So what you did there was, you understood very clearly the issue you had. You thought very carefully about what type of advice do we need to help us address this. And you went out and found the right fit for what you required. So you did excellent due diligence. You didn't wander down to the pub on Friday night, meet a guy at the bar and let him decide what your strategy was.
No.
Did the job right. You were a good client in that scenario. Whereas we hear all these stories all the time about this charlatan that came in and advised on this and charged all this money. And we look at it and we say, did you not see that coming? Which for me might suggest that some of these businesses that get poor advice and fail actually got the advice they deserved. And the ones that do superbly well got the advice they deserved.
I think there's, I've been reading a lot recently, and there's a great book by Margaret Heffernan called Willful Blindness, so which touches a lot on what you're talking about there. And I think that's anyone who's out there listening should read that. Okay, so I guess we could keep going forever. So what's our conclusion here, right? So is there, I mean, do we think business consulting is broken? Do we think that people who are going to find consultants are not doing it in the right way? Is it all of the above?
I think my perspective is, to say it is broken and the implication that it's smashed in 1,000 pieces all lying on the floor is absolutely wrong. To say that it is perfect and foolproof is equally as wrong. But to blame the consultancy sector for all of its ills and suggest that clients are blameless is also erroneous. Really, it is incumbent on the client, the person who is seeking and receiving the advice, to make sure that they are working with advisors who they believe have actually got the relevant credentials to advise them. So if you are the little start-up coffee shop, you don't need PwC. You probably need your local economic development agency's in-house person who will point you in a few right directions. But if you are a high-growth technology firm and you have got some major development challenges, don't wander down the pub and say, does anybody know anything about computers? Go and find the right people with the right knowledge and the right experience to fill your gap.
And I agree with that, but I'd add to one point, and that's challenge the experts, right? I think thing is that once you hear someone talking, go and ask them and really dig deep into what they're saying. Dig deep into what they're saying.
You how boring would our work be if nobody ever said, but why?
Yeah, exactly. Or even question, I mean, a lot of people question, and they must do the same for you, question your experience, my experience, and you know, mine's out there. You can go and you can see it in my thoughts. As we're doing these series, you know, you'll get more of the, you know, the philosophy that we have. But I think it's, I see far too often people just sitting there passively accepting advice and not questioning it.
Yeah. Wonderful.
Excellent. Thanks a lot for that, Alan.
It's pleasure. So I hope anybody listening in has enjoyed that. Our plan is to do a rolling series of these on a range of topics. If there's anything that you would like to read or join Manav and I on one of these little sessions, please let us know and we'll carry on posting our little fireside chats on the channels you found this in.